Well, I want you to turn in your Bible to Numbers 11. Numbers 11. Can I tell you, I think we are a nation of ingrates. You say, what do you mean by that? I think that we're a nation of ingrates. I think that we ought to be a grateful people and we are not. When you think about everything that we have and we still complain. The life that we live is so much better than your great grandparents had. You have the privilege of getting into an automobile, air-conditioned automobile. You know, when I was a kid, and I was thrilled to have it, I had a 1966 Custom 500, and it didn't have a drive. I had to drive it in second. But you know, I had like 240 air condition. Had two windows going 40 miles an hour. That's the kind of air condition that I had. But can I tell you that today I would not buy a vehicle that did not have air condition in it? That's how sorry I have become. The life that we live today, it's easier than any in history. There has never been a time in history when so many people in one country have had the material blessings that we have in this nation. I've not done a whole lot of traveling. I've been to a few countries. But I know that every time I come back to America, I just want to get on my knees and thank God. I want to thank God for the blessings that He has poured upon this place. Now, you say, why do you think God has done that? Well, I think, first of all, because we serve the right God. I believe that this country was founded upon what is called the Judeo-Christian ethic. You take the things that are in the Word of God, Old and New Testament, you apply those to societal life, and you have all types of inventions and all types of discoveries, and people are blessed, and we live better. Our poorest people live better than kings and queens did 150 years ago. I heard about a professor that was standing in a classroom of young people, and he said, how many of you would rather be alive right now or to go back and be the king and queen of this particular country? And the one that he used was Great Britain, back when it was in its heyday, where that the sun never set on the British Empire. How many of you would rather live today than then? And some of them be like, oh man, that'd be awesome to be the king and queen. Yeah, and you died when you were about 45 because they didn't have antibiotics. You rode around on the back of a horse. When I think about being a preacher today, how easy that I've got it. Now, I don't have a brand new truck, though. The newest truck that we have, or newest vehicle we've got, is a 16. Great truck. I have people all the time thinking that it's a 23. All right? I wouldn't mind getting in that truck and going anywhere in this country. It's got air conditioning. You know John Wesley, who was the founder of Methodism? Do you know that he had to ride everywhere on the back of a horse? He didn't have a Silverado. He didn't have, F-150. He carried his stuff in saddlebags. I got a little camper shell on the back of mine, and I carry all kind of stuff back there. I even have a little thing so that I can reach up in there so that I don't have to crawl up in there and get it, and I can pull it back out to me and I can hold it. I've got it so good. I get to have as many showers a day as I want to. In the summertime, 3 is a good number. Wintertime, 2 is a good number. But there are people in years gone by, and they bathed on Saturday. That's nuts to me. But can I tell you that that's the way that it was? I remember hearing stories from my aunts and uncles that have passed on now, how that they would get together on Saturday, and there was a big old wash tub. And they always wanted to be the first one because everybody bathed in the same water. Now, I'm telling you right now, that gives me the heebie-jeebies just thinking about it. But we are so blessed, but yet what do? We complain, complain, complain. We're getting ready to go into the holiday season, and in less than a week, that will be the busiest travel day of the year at the airports. And there's going to be fist fights at airports. That guy broke in line. That guy took my seat. What do you mean I got to take my shoes off? And there are going to be people, and they're going to be irritated. And you'll see it on your social media. You will see it. And all the time, they're going to get on an airplane and they're going to fly thousands of miles in a few short hours. And they're going to land safely. And they're going to be able to see their loved ones instead of having to sit on a buckboard pulled by a couple of horses and take 6 months to get there. That's what they're going to be able to do. And yet, what do? That flight attendant looked at me ugly. I can't believe they didn't give me ice with my Diet Coke. What's the matter with you people? Don't you know that I paid $300 for this seat? Yeah, you paid $300 for a seat. That's why you're sitting back there with the cows. And so we have it so good. But yet, we still have stupid people. I'm not saying you are, unless this is you. People that believe this way astound me. In the last 2 weeks, the city of New York City, they have elected a man to be in charge of a multi-billion-dollar city. The man has never had a job except working for his mama. He's an avowed socialist. He's an avowed Islamist. He walked it back a little bit before the election, but 6 months ago, he wanted to get rid of the police and let social workers go and handle situations. Yeah, that's going to work. You know how people with criminal tendencies, you know how you handle that? Have somebody bigger, meaner, bigger guns with it. That's how you handle it. But the people of New York City, predominantly, the statistics bear this out, it is single, educated, I use that term in quotes, women. 40% of his constituency that put him in office was educated, unmarried women. It's not just New York City. What about out there on the left coast? City of Seattle. They have now hired to be their mayor. They voted her in. A 42-year-old socialist. And what is she going to do? She's going to give everybody free grocery stores. That's going to work. You know how she makes it? She has a wealthy set of parents. She's 42, unmarried. She has a child. She makes it because every month her mama and daddy send her $2,200 a month to take care of the grandbaby. You go, what's wrong with that? Not a thing in the world. But don't tell me that you know how to run a city of millions and millions and millions of dollars when you don't have a job that can support you and your family. We ought to be so thankful when people do things for us. It's an amazing thing to me. And I'm going to get to the message in a minute. Anybody ever heard of a joker named Karl Marx? Oh, yeah. He's one of those guys. I've got a book in my office about men that ruled from the grave. I've had this book for about 10 years. Marx is one of those men that has ruled from the grave. He is the father of what we know as communism. Socialism, communism, they're bedfellows. Not hardly a dime's worth of difference between them. Karl Marx, he basically spent his life with a philosophy of ripping capitalism. Wrote a book, Das Kapital. He didn't have a job. He had kids that he abandoned. But yet, he was able to find a friend of his named Engels, Frederick Engels. And Engels said, hey, you don't have to find a way to make money. I'll give you money. And you can write and you can talk about the evils of capitalism and how that communism is great. You can spend your time writing and you don't have to worry about taking care of your children. And he didn't. And so Frederick Engels was like, I'm with you, brother. We're down for the struggle. Where did Engels get his money? From his daddy. His dad was a businessman that made big money in what is called big cotton. In other words, he was a capitalist and he had made such a massive amount of money that his own son goes, that's wrong, but he didn't mind living in the house. He didn't mind the trust fund. He got it from his daddy, and then he began to bemoan it, and he got hooked up with Marx, and they have gone down in history, and now we have nitwits that vote for that kind of stuff. What about a man named Henry David Thoreau? He was a guy that said, we've got to get back to simple living. I like simple. I got chickens at my house. I like simple. But he made out like he was living the simple life in a place called Walden Pond, Massachusetts. And Thoreau was one of these guys, and he would write, and it was almost like it was a Norman Rockwell painting in what he was writing. How that he lived in the woods. He was back to nature. Do you know that he could walk to his mom and daddy's house in 20 minutes? Which he did multiple times a week. Why did he do that? So he could have dinner. So he could have supper. So he could go to their parties. He's out there in that little cabin supposedly at Walden Pond. And I mean, he's out there with nothing but the bears. But yet, just over there, you got guys in the wintertime that are ice fishing. And girls over here that are ice skating. And in the summertime, over here, you've got people and they're having picnics. And he just hung out with all of them, but he's living the simple life and making light. He's out there like a monk. We ought to be thanking God for what capitalism has given to us. And I believe that God has used that form of economics to give us the standard of living that we've got. Let me do a little sidebar here for our young people. Young people, when you want to gripe at your mom and daddy, I want you to ask yourself some questions. Who provided the bed that you're sleeping in? Did you buy it? Did they buy it? If you're able to drive, did they buy you that car or did you buy that car? What about the clothes you wear? Oh, I worked one summer and I bought some stuff. Yeah, you probably were stupid enough to buy $120 jeans. So who bought the clothes? What about that cell phone you like to scroll on? Who did that? Did you go out back and raise the food that you're eating on the table? Or did they take their money and buy it and say, hey, this is good for you, eat it? So the next time you want to gripe about your parents, why don't you just do this instead? Why don't you think about everything they've done for you and give them a big old kiss on the cheek? That'd be a lot better. It would show that you've got gratitude in your heart. And let me just, y'all don't listen to this, but if you'll act that way, they'll do more of it. But if you get the attitude, they owe me. Oh, that grates. That grates. I had some kids one time that was razzing on a kid in our youth group years ago. And this kid did not have the material things that they had. They had cars, he did not. They had nice clothes, he's wearing hand-me-downs. And finally, one day, I was sick of it. I said, let me tell you something. Those cars you drive and those clothes that you wear, you didn't buy one of them. Your mom and daddy did it. Don't be getting on somebody else because their parents were not as good to them as yours have been to you. So we are a nation of ingrates if we're not careful. Now, let me ask you a question. How many of you know what God did at Sodom and Gomorrah? You know that? I mean, we read about that in Genesis. I mean, Abraham, you know, he's trying to save his nephew. And it goes all the way from 50 down to 10 righteous people. They can't find him. Finally, the angels start dragging him out. And the next thing you know, finish this for me. Fire and brimstone. That's right. And those sulfur balls start falling. And there's fires going everywhere. And there's one little place on the whole plain. There's five cities on that plain, not just Sodom and Gomorrah. There were five cities, and the one right in the middle is Zoar. That was the only one that did not burn. But we know all about the judgment of God falling on those godless homosexuals. We know all about that. But there's another time that fire fell. I want you to look with me at Numbers 11. Numbers 11. And you can see what the title of the message is, Don't Bite the Hand That Feeds You. If you don't know what that means, it means that if it's like you're a dog and your owner is getting ready to put food down there and the next thing you know, you and you bite them. Well, that's pretty stupid because they won't give you nothing the next time. And so that's the title that I've chosen for this morning. And so I want you to look with me at Numbers 11. And the first thing that I want you to see is I want you to see that complaining is deadly. Can be. It can be. Now we remember Sodom. Boom, boom, boom. Fireballs everywhere. I mean, the place is destroyed so much so that it falls over into part of the Dead Sea. But here in chapter 11 of Numbers, It begins, it says, and when the people complained. There's not homosexuality here. You know, we're not thinking Genesis, 19 now. We're thinking this is different. I mean, everybody gripes every once in a while. And when the people complained, it displeased the Lord. Now, that word displeased there in our English, it's not as intense as it needs to be. You know, when my kids didn't do something that I wanted, sometimes it displeased me. I wished you wouldn't have cut the grass that way. I wish that you would have done this differently in your bedroom. You need to clean that bathroom up a little bit better than that. So maybe I was displeased. But this displeasure is different. It says it displeased the Lord, and the Lord heard it. So that means that they are continually complaining. I mean, it's always in their mouth. It's always coming out of their lips. Now, we'll see what they were griping about in just a moment. But it says that the fire of the Lord burnt among them. That means the same fire that fell on Sodom, it began falling on God's people because they're complaining about what's going on in their life. And it says it consumed them that were in the uttermost or the outer part of the camp. And the people cried unto Moses. And when Moses prayed, then the Lord, or prayed to the Lord, the fire was quenched. In other words, it stopped because Moses asked God to stop it. I'm not going to take time to go into the necessity of, of intercession on our part, but I thank God that there are people that intercede on our behalf. And he called the name of the place Taberah. And they called it that because the fire of the Lord burned among them there. But when you come to verse number 4, I want you to notice that there is a change in location. From verse 4 through the end of this chapter, they are at a place, and you may can pronounce this better than me, but if you look at verse 34 and 35, I think it is pronounced Kibroth Hattaavah. I think that's the way that it's pronounced. And why is that? It's because it was a place where they buried people. It was a deadly place. It was a place where the grave was craving more and more. Proverbs talks about that the grave is never satiated. It's never quenched. And so you have these people, and in verse number 4, we see some of those that were on the outer part of the camp at the place of burning, and now they're at another location that is the place of the grave that's craving. And the mixed multitude, that's a phrase that maybe you ought to underline. The mixed multitude, who are they? Now, you may not have known this, but when the people of Israel left Egypt, you remember if you go back to Exodus, and you remember the Ten Commandments and Charlton Heston in the movie, how that he led them out of Egypt. When I get to heaven, if Moses doesn't look like Charlton Heston, I'm going to be disappointed. And you've got him bringing the people out of Egypt in what is called the Exodus. And as they come out, the hand of God is seen everywhere. But it wasn't just the Hebrews that left. There were some people in there thinking, you know what, with everything that's going on, hey, I want to hang out with that group that's leaving and not this group that's staying. So there's a mixed multitude that follow along in the rear. These are Gentiles. Maybe they have intermarried with the Hebrews. But they are not part of what we would say is Israel proper. They're a mixed multitude. And as they are following along, and now they are at this place where that they have gone through the fire and they felt that a little bit. You now have got them at a different location and where people are dying. And by the way, the miracles of Exodus, in the first three verses, only 3 days in the past. That's like if it's Sunday here, we think about, well, wonder what happened last Thursday. Huh. This is what God did on Thursday. All the Egyptians' firstborn died. All the firstborn animals died. All the firstborn people died. And then they remember what happened in the previous plagues, the other nine. 3 days. That's a distant memory, evident for some of us. And it says that as they were there, they fell a-lusting. That's just an old English way of saying that they began to have desires that they should not have. Now, what were those desires? It says that the children of Israel also wept again and said, "Who shall give us flesh to eat?" Now, you would think that a God that was big enough to take them from slavery, a God that was big enough to stop the whips from popping on their back and bursting open their skin, you would think that a God that could do that, they would have enough faith in Him to say, "Well, who's going to give us something to eat?" And then they begin to say things like this, "While we remember the fish." Yeah. You do. You know why you went fishing? Because it was free. You didn't have any money. If you caught something, you could clean it. You could cook it. You say, "What do you know about that?" I know that my granddaddy used to go fishing, and that was what we ate at our grandparents' house about 3 times a week. Why is that? Because it was cheap. They caught it, cleaned it, cooked it, and didn't have to go to the grocery store. We didn't do a lot of restaurants back then. And so we remember the fish. Man, those fish fries at the bank of the Nile, man, those things were nice. But then it goes on to say, we did it freely. Didn't cost us a nickel. It goes on to say, oh, you remember those cucumbers? Now, I like cucumbers. But I'm going to tell you something. I don't want to have to live on them. But they're thinking, oh, man, those cucumbers were so good. And the melons, oh, my goodness gracious. The leeks, the onions, and the garlic. Now, can I tell you, in my life, I've had leek and onion soup. I don't want it every week. Matter of fact, I don't know that I want it every month. But these people are remembering the way that it used to be when they were in slavery. Well, let me ask you a question. Do you remember how it was before you trusted Christ? Or do you put a little Norman Rockwell with it? And you begin to think about, oh man, I had it so good. Man, me and my friends, we did what we wanted to. We came and we went. No restrictions. And you think about the sinfulness that you got involved in, and you begin to romanticize about it, not realizing and remembering the hangovers that you had. The bursted families that you were a part of. And how that sin had created havoc in your life. And we begin to think about, oh, those glorious days. When in reality, the glorious days was the day that you met the Lord and what He's done for you in the meantime. And so there is a complaining that can be deadly. So what does the text continue to say? But now our soul is dried away. There is nothing at all besides this manna before our eyes. Now I want you to think about this for a moment. The Psalms tells us that manna is angel food. That means that's like eating a Dunkin' Donut hot off the rack. I mean, it's hard to beat a Dunkin' Donut that's hot. I mean, you can take that thing to keep it from getting all over the corners of your mouth. If you will squeeze it real close together and make it tight, get all that air gushed out of it, you can eat one in one bite. You say, how do you know that? I can do it in a heartbeat. That ain't a problem in the world. And that's a good something to eat right there. These people had angel food. And what are they saying? We've got nothing before our eyes. Now, let me tell you what manna was like. The scripture tells us a little bit. He said it was as coriander seed. Now, what is that like? Well, it's a color that is bdellium. Did you know that that was something that was in Eden? You can go back to the Garden of Eden and you can see all of the beautiful things that was there. And bdellium was one of those things that was in Eden. And now God in His grace has begun to give this to them. And every night when the dew falls, you have this manna that is there. Now I want you to see what they could do with it. They would gather it and they would grind it in their mills. Think of a little organ grinder, okay? They would grind it in their little mills. They would beat it into a mortar, not a cement, but a paste, all right? They would bake it in pans and made cakes of it. And the taste of it was as the taste of fresh oil. In other words, they could eat it, they could grind it, they could beat it, and they could do all kind of things. If it was today, somebody would make a book out of it. How to have a new recipe of manna for 365 days. I mean, they had this from God Himself. But what are they doing? They're complaining. That's all we have is this stinking manna. And so, God hears them. Look at verse 10. Moses heard it. The Lord's already heard it. And Moses is hearing this as he's walking through the camp. Now, they didn't live in homes like you do. They lived in a tent. You know what that meant? That meant that you heard things. You heard what your neighbors were saying. They heard what you were saying. I mean, you can try to whisper if you want to, but sometimes it just kind of comes out. It's loud. You know, in our house, Debbie will say something, and if it's something where, you know, she would like for it to be halfway secret, she whispers, and I'm thinking, there's nobody here but us. You know, I'm about half deaf now. You need to go ahead and speak up. Well, I don't want nobody here. I said, well, there's nobody here. You know, the only time that's crazy is, you know, if you have your cell phone and the next thing you know, you hit the wrong button and somebody's listening to your conversation. You say, have you ever had that done? I've never had it happen to me that I know of, but I've had other people and my phone will ring and I'll go, hello. And you just hear people talking in the background. And I'm screaming, hello, hello. There's a preacher that is a dear friend of mine. I mean, there was like a 15-minute conversation. Finally, I thought, I guess I just ought to hang up before I hear something I don't need to hear. And so that's what I did. But they were intense. And as they're talking, Moses is walking. They're going, stinking manna. I mean, I'm tired of looking at it. I wished I had something else. And you know what? It says that God's anger was kindled against them. That's what it says in verse 10. In other words, it was provoked. God was ticked off with them. Now, you remember back in the first three verses? They were complaining, and now they're at it again. 3 days out in those first three verses. I don't know how many days it's been since then. I know they're in a different location now, but I know this. I know that their memories are short on the goodness of God. And because of that, God's wrath is kindled against them. And then Moses begins to basically complain himself. Which brings me to my second thought this morning. There's a contagion that's easily spread. A contagion. That's something that is contagious. Doesn't that make sense? There are certain types of infections that you need to be quarantined. There are other type of infections you do not need to be quarantined. All of us went through that 5 years ago. That's when it began, and about 3 years ago it finally let up. But there was a contagion. I still see people to this day wearing masks. I mean, I don't even understand that, but I hadn't got time to preach that today. But there's a contagion that is easily spread. And can I tell you that complaining, griping, grumbling is one of those? Where did this begin? Well, in verses that we've already covered, it began with a mixed multitude. And then it gradually, the people of Israel, the Hebrews, began to go, yeah, those Gentiles, they're right. We are sick and tired of this manna. We don't like it either. And now it begins to spread, and now Moses is walking through, and now he's griping about it. And what's his gripe? His gripe is that I got to deal with these people. It gets to the point to where he just wants God to just kill him. I'm tired of it. You know, can I give these people flesh? I mean, how am I going to give them enough mutton for all of this? You got 2 million people here. I'm just one guy. What am I going to do? I mean, they're to the point to where, you know, they don't want to follow my leadership. And to be honest with you, I don't want to lead them. And that's the attitude that he's got here. And so you see that all of this is happening. And what does God do? God says, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give them some flesh. Now, I want you to notice this in verse 19. You guys are tired of manna and you want some meat to eat? Let me tell you how it's going to go down. You shall not eat one day, nor 2 days. In other words, you're not just going to have, you know, a little bit of a little bit of meat for 1 day or 2 days. He said, you're not going to go for 5 days, not even 10 or 20. But even a whole month until it come out of your nostrils. You think about that for a moment. I'm going to make you eat until it comes out of your nasal cavity. That's how much you're going to eat meat. He says that it'll be loathsome to you. How many of you ever wanted something so bad and then when you got it, you think, you know, I really didn't like that. I really didn't need that. Anybody ever had anything happen like that? Oh, it's like, man, if I just had that, I'd be happy the rest of my life. And then all of a sudden you get it and it's like, maybe not. If we just had a little bit of meat, God says, okay, I'm tired of you griping. I'm going to give you some meat. And so what happens? God causes a wind. And that wind's going to come along, and all of a sudden these quail are going to come in, and they're going to be so thick, you're going to be knocking them out of the air. And when you read the amount of people that they are, or not amount of people, the amount of quail that they are going to collect, each person is, the people will collect these themselves. The equivalence there is like 2 55-gallon drums of quail. Yeah, I could see where that would get old quick. I like quail. I don't eat it very often since my Uncle Edwin died. My Uncle Edwin lived down in Macon, and he would call me and he would say, if you'll come down here one morning for breakfast, I'll fix you some quail. And about once a year, I'd get up about 5:30 and I'd drive down to Macon, and I'd go over to his house over near Lake Tobosoffke, and he would have it already cooking. And he and I would sit there. My Aunt Montine, she might sit down a little bit, but she didn't really care about it a whole lot. But he would have fried quail. He would have homemade biscuits, and he would have homemade gravy. And we would sit there, and me and him together, and if Aunt Montine wanted to be a part of it, we'd eat 2 dozen of them. You say, that's a lot of quail. Ah, quail's little. So that's why you eat 2 dozen of them, all right? And those were good times. I won't do it every day. Don't want to do it every day. But these people had complained to God so much that God said, I'm going to make you eat this a whole month. And what are they complaining about? We miss those onions. We miss those leeks. We miss that garlic. Oh, man, and that fish that we caught in the river. That's some good stuff. It might have been, but it doesn't give you the right to gripe to Almighty God for the goodness that He has given to all of us. It went from the mixed multitude to the tent of the congregation, even all the way to Moses himself. The preacher's not immune to complaining. God, what are you doing to me? What are you doing to my family? Exactly what I'm supposed to is the answer. Let me give you a third thing, and my time's getting gone. There's a company that we should seek. It's not the mixed multitude. But if you look at verse 24, there's a group of elders. These are people that are respected people that are among the 2 million. There's 70 of them. And Moses is about to get some help. And this is what it says. Gather the 70 men of the elders of the people and set them round about the tabernacle. Now you remember the tabernacle preceded the temple, all right? The tabernacle was a tent, and it moved from one place to another place to another place to another place. The temple was a permanent building, and its location was in Jerusalem. That's where the coming third temple will be located as well. And so you've got these men. They are now there, and they're sitting around the tabernacle. And the Lord came down in a cloud. Now, what does that mean? That means that the very presence of God was now among them. I want to have people in my life that the presence of God is evident. I want to have people that are in my life that I know how to commune with God. I don't want to spend my life with people that don't know God. I want people to know God, and I don't mind sharing the Lord with them. But the people that I want to really be in my, what I would say, the inner circle, I want to know that when I need somebody to get a hold of the altars of God and hold those horns, I want somebody that I've got confidence in that they can do that. He's got 70 men here, and I want you to see what these men were like. God is there in this cloud, and it says, it came to pass That means that after a time, I don't know how long they sat there. It could have been 10 minutes. It could have been an hour. It may have been a half a day. But I know that these 70 men are sitting there at that tabernacle. And it says, when the Spirit of God rested on them, they prophesied and did not cease. In other words, they began to speak the words that God had given to them. That's a good company to be in. When you've got somebody that is taking a good word from the Lord and giving it to you as a source of encouragement, it is a time when you can thank God that person has now become a portion of your life. But there's always some that they don't like it when God's working in a lot of different people. And they go, you know, these people are prophesying. You think we need to tell them to hush? And what does Moses say in verse 29? Enviest thou for my sake? In other words, I know you like me, but do you think this is going to help me if you get them to hush? You're not helping me by them hushing. You know, I don't want to be the only one that has a relationship with God. I like the fact that these men are prophesying themselves now. He says, would God that all the Lord's people were prophets. Can I tell you, it is a blessing to my heart when many of God's people are growing and they're learning to grow on their own without having to be spoon-fed all the time? We need to know how to grow personally. I don't want you to just learn what I speak to you from this pulpit. And I thank God that there's very few weeks that go by that I don't have somebody say something like, man, I have learned so much from your preaching. I know more of the Bible now than I have ever known in my life. And that makes me feel good as a pastor. But there will come a time when I will not be in your life. And you've got to know how to grow in the Lord personally. You need to be here on Sundays. We've got other members that ought to be here on Sundays. Why? Because that's the Lord's day. But can I tell you, you need to walk with God Monday through Saturday also? You need to have a relationship with the Lord. And do you know what encourages you Monday through Saturday? It's when you talk to God's people and you pray for one another. And you love one another. And you go and have meals with one another. And you have coffee with one another. Those are the things that's going to help you in your Christian walk. But if you don't hang out with God's people, before long, you're listening to the mixed multitude. And they're complaining. Man, I can't believe you guys still sing those old fuddy-duddy songs. I can't believe you still wear a suit and tie to preach in. And the next thing you know, you'll be going, yeah, yeah, yeah. We ought to have a certain group of people that we hang out with. Why? Because we're all wanting to grow in Christ together. Now let me close. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17 to 19. Tells us how we're to live our lives in this affluent nation that we're in. With everything that we've got going, and we have been blessed, my soul, we've been blessed. This is what Paul is telling young Timothy. Charge them, preach to them that are rich in this world. In other words, you are blessed materially in this world. They be not high-minded. that be not conceited. Well, don't you know who I am? Anybody ever known of anybody that played that card? Don't you know who I am? My dad was a cop. And when I started driving, he didn't call me Tommy, he called me Dooley. There was a song back then called Hang Down Your Head, Tom Dooley. All right? He called me Dooley. He said, Dooley, and don't start calling me Dooley, by the way. Dooley, when you start driving, don't you act a fool and start getting stopped by my friends on the police force. And he said, and I'm telling you right now, if you get locked up, you're staying there. I'm not coming to get you out. And do you know, I believed him. He didn't say, you know, a whole lot, but when he talked, I mean, he meant it. And there were times when I did get stopped, and I'm thinking, should I play my name here? And there were times when they would say, you hired Foskey's boy? Yes, sir. And there were times when I got out of it. And they would say, because of your daddy, I'm not going to give you a ticket, but I'm going to tell him about it in the morning. So you better tell him about it when you get home tonight, because he's going to know it in the morning. And there were times when I would be accused by dear friends of saying, oh yeah, you play the cop kid card. Well, I've known of people and they go, don't you know who I am? I like it when people say, I don't care who you are. That's what I like. Oh, don't you know what I've got? Can I tell you that Elon Musk puts his britches on the same way that you do, one leg at a time? I don't care that he's the world's richest man. He is no better than you are. He just got more money than you do. That's all it is. You and I need to realize that we are a royal priesthood. We're a chosen generation. We're a peculiar people. And so we're not high-minded. We don't get to thinking that we're something special just because God has given us the brain or the intuition to make certain decisions financially. And we don't trust in those uncertain riches. Let me tell you something. Easy money found is easy money gone. I mean, you can come into money fast and you think, man, it's always going to be, and the next thing you know, it's not. Why do you think that you can have people? I think about a fella, and I hate to even call his name because he's been retired from baseball for years. There was a guy that used to play for the Cardinals and for the Giants named Jack Clark. Big old first baseman. He could kill a baseball. You know, you didn't bat but about 250, but when he hit one, he hit it a mile. And he played first base for the Cardinals and for the Giants. And this was back in the day when people were not making like these astronomical sums today, but he was making about $2 to $3 million a year. And he did that for several years, and when he got finished playing baseball, he was $11 million in debt. I don't understand that. But let me tell you, when you give these kids in this NIL stuff in college football right now, you give some kid that's 18, 19 years old $4 million to play quarterback, what do you think that kid's going to do? He's going to mess his life up. When he's got that kind of money, he's got friends everywhere. And so we don't trust in those uncertain riches. No, we trust in the living God who has given us richly all things to enjoy. Now, they that do good, those that have been blessed materially, they that do good, that be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate. The word communicate is an old English word, simply means they're willing to share, right? Laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come. When is that? That's when you die and go to heaven, that they may lay hold on eternal life. You can show that you're a believer by the generosity of what you do with your blessings here. I want you and I to be a generous people. I want this church to be a generous church. And I believe that if we are a grateful people, that sets the table for generosity. Because God has been so good to us, we ought to be willing to share it with other people. If you look, the goodness of God is always on display. No matter what trial you're going through at this moment, the goodness of God is on display. If you'll look. And I hope that you will. Hey, God has fed us, God has clothed us, God has sheltered us. Let's not bite His hand.